Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
And now I'm joined by our regular parenting expert, clinical child psychologist, Dr. David Coleman. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Claire. How are you doing?
Very well, and good to hear from you. And people can get in touch on 51551 with questions, but we've plenty in already, and I want to start with this one. This is about a friendship with a young boy. So let's go through it here. My 7-year-old son has a friend at school, and he also plays sport with him at the weekends. This boy is much more confident than my son, but at times can ignore him and isolate him from others in school during these social interactions. I've checked with other parents, and it seems they're having similar issues. This interaction pattern can alternate between ignoring and isolating my child to being very friendly and looking for play dates. I've encouraged my son to tell him that this is not nice behaviour and that it upsets him, but he seems to let it all blow over until it happens again. He doesn't cry, but I know he's very hurt by this boy's actions. I'm just wondering if you have any advice on how to help him manage this situation.
I think it's always tricky, Claire, whenever children get isolated like that, or if they're being ignored or left out, because it's probably unrealistic to expect, certainly a 7-year-old, to be able to address that in any kind of meaningful way with this other lad. I think it's up to the adults around to either, you know, both, well, I suppose to both spot the interaction that's happening, as this man has, but then also to say something to the boy who's doing the ignoring, or who has this kind of habit of drawing people in and then pushing them away. And so I think he needs to get that message that from the adults, from people who have a little bit more power and a little bit more authority, that this is not okay behavior. And that if he's playing with somebody, then he needs to stay playing with them. And, you know, if these are his friends, then he needs to treat them like his friends and play with them nicely and always include them. And so, you know, whether that's happening on a play date, if it's the case that this lad comes over with some other kids from the school, or if it's happening in school, it might be the teacher who's doing that. But if it's happening at home, then it's up to the mum herself to, you know, point out that everybody has to play together, rather than the group being kind of siphoned off or split off, as it sounds like this little boy has a habit of doing.
But this parent who is trying to manage her own 7-year-old, who is the victim, for want of a better word, of this, what should she do? Should she speak to the teachers, to the football coach, or the parent of the other child?
Yeah, any and all of the above. And certainly as well, if she's also spoken to some other parents in the class, which it sounds like she has. So she's aware that this lad doesn't just treat her own son like this, but he treats other children in the same way. Then, you know, certainly you've got now maybe 2 or 3 or 4 parents who could be going in to talk to the teacher about this interaction pattern that they spotted. And then they can go and they can talk to the teacher about it. It might be something the teacher can address in terms of the class, sometimes in circle time, things like that. These are the kinds of things that teachers can talk about, or even just practically, you know, on a day-to-day basis, again, just intervene and say, oh, it seems like you're not playing with so-and-so, but I, you know, you guys always play together, and I don't think it's very nice for you not to play with whoever it might be that he's not playing with. From her own perspective, then, with her own son, I mean, of course, you know, you'd hope that she's in a position as well to acknowledge what seems to be happening and acknowledge that her son seems upset, even though, as she says, he's not crying. But that's not to say that she wouldn't want to talk to him and wouldn't want to let him know that she understands that this is really difficult and that she and others are trying to do their best, and that it seems to be that this is how this other little boy treats people and that it's not about her son. Because that's the thing, I suppose, that most children who do get left out, who do get pushed to the sidelines, assume that there's something wrong with them, that mm-hmm. they're being pushed aside. And so that's, I suppose, the bit that you want to try to protect against, you know, any sense for her own son that that he has some kind of problem, or that there's something wrong with him that makes him unlikable, or that there's a reason why he's been left out.
Okay, let's move to the next one then. It's about quarrelling siblings, and we've all heard this one before, but this is from a mother who says her 3-year-old son regularly pushes and hits his older 5-year-old sister. I'm a stay-at-home mum and I find this very hard. They do have a great relationship, but he's still aggressive with his older sister. How do I manage this? That's a common one, I would imagine, David.
Very common, and I think sometimes it's a little bit, that difference between boys and girls. I think boys just tend to be much more physical in their play, and so that can then escalate into pushing and hitting and all sorts of other kinds of behaviors. But I think the key thing when you've got young children like this is just about intervening regularly and often and pointing out that hitting is not okay. And so if he pushes his sister, if he hits his older sister, then you have to pick him up and lift him out of the room, bring him with you maybe to the kitchen if that has happened in the sitting room, and then you say to him, you cannot hit your sister, you cannot push your sister. If you keep hitting her, then I'm not going to let you play with her. So if you want to be able to play with your sister, because I think you guys like playing, then you've got to stop hitting her. And so it's that constant repetition of the hitting is not okay, you can't hit, you can't push. He gets removed, so he's not allowed to continue whatever play or whatever game, or if they were, whatever they were doing together, until such time as he's calmer and ready to play without the hitting. And so then, of course, that might be 2 or 3 minutes later, you're letting him back into play, but you might have to intervene 5 minutes later or 10 minutes later when it all turns a little bit messy again. But it is just, unfortunately, that constant intervention of saying hitting is not okay, you may not hit, and then you remove him. And it's not that you're giving him like time out, you're not sending him to the stairs or anything like that. You're just simply taking him out of the environment so that he physically can't touch his sister. And then say to him, when you're ready to play nicely, then you can go back in and play with her. And so that, I think, is the way to deal with a 3-year-old.
Repetition. Keep doing it. Keep doing the same thing and hoping that something gives. Right. Now we're going to move to a young boy who appears, according to this, to have entered his teenage years a little prematurely, in his parents' eyes anyway. Please, can you ask David whether puberty can start with boys as early as 10 or 11? Our agreeable, happy little boy has morphed into a typical teenager seemingly overnight. He's angry, aggressive, and unhappy, and it's very hard to handle. Please help.
Yeah, I mean, I think lots of parents are finding that their preteens are becoming very teenager-like in their behavior. And I'm not sure that it's necessarily to do with puberty. I'd say it's unlikely that a 10 or 11-year-old boy is hitting puberty, although, it's not impossible. Certainly girls, I think, do come into puberty a little bit younger. And so you might find a 10 or 11-year-old girl who's starting puberty, but it's not that common for boys. But what is becoming, unfortunately, more and more common is just the influence of the internet and social media and things like pornography. And so those are the kinds of things that just change the dynamic sometimes in classrooms. So you have some boys, perhaps at age 10 or 11, who are beginning, for example, to see things like pornography, and then they're talking about these. And so the language becomes different. And so certainly I've noticed over the last couple of years that there are a lot more parents talking to me about just how their kids seem really off kilter coming home from school, that they're kind of all angsty and stressy and tense. And I think a lot of it is because of what, is getting talked about now, in the playgrounds and in the schoolyards, where it just wouldn't have been an issue. Kids could continue to be kids at age 10 or 11, whereas now, whether it's TikToks that are coming on stream as well, and again, some kids feeling like, this is where they need to be because, some of the boys or girls in their class are starting to do these things. And so it just, shifts the dynamic, and I think that can throw kids off kilter, and that's perhaps where some of that, grumpiness and unhappiness and stuff is coming from. So I think a lot of it is about talking to your son and commenting, noticing that he seems really off form, and then beginning to guess about the things that might be leading him to be off form.
Because we can't prevent those conversations from happening, the ones that are going to put them off kilter, as you were saying there, David. So we need to find a way to allow them to talk about that, to discuss what they've heard that has upset them.
Yeah, although I do think, I mean, I know we've probably talked about it before here. And I know I've certainly talked about it in lots of different fora, but it would be just great if, as a kind of society, we decided that, phones certainly and social media and the internet are just not okay for primary school kids at the very least. I mean, it'd be great if we could extend that into secondary schools as well. But I think if we could move kids away from screens and devices, so that they're not going to be influenced by them, particularly in some of the really negative ways, I just think it would really shift things again. And any school schools that I've been in where the schools have introduced policies, you know, in consultation with parents where they're not allowing phones, or they're certainly not allowing phones into the classroom or into the schoolyard, you know, it just makes a big difference. Kids continue to just play as children. And so they're not just all talking about TikToks, and they're not all, you know, huddled together and discussing whatever latest trend or, you know, things like pornography. So, yeah, I just think there's probably something happening in school. I think anytime that, you know, you notice a big shift in a child's behavior, that they become, you know, as this mum has described, angry and unhappy and so on, and there's nothing changing at home, so your home life is pretty stable, there's nothing changing in their extended family, then, you know, the only other really significant environment that they're spending time in is school. And so it is quite likely that something in the school, you know, environment has shifted or changed. And that's most likely then going to be a change in the dynamic in the class. And I think lots of, you know, teachers of kind of fifth and sixth class will tell you that there's a lot more angst and angstiness in amongst the fifth and sixth class pupils than there ever was, maybe, you know, certainly 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Very difficult, though, to address it, because, you know, those things, the Snapchat, TikTok, the rest of it, it is there. You know, we would like it not to be, but it is there. So we're going to have to deal with the product of it when they're coming home from school, as things stand.
But I think it's just, you know, it's such a, like, I think it's just something that we need to be talking a lot more about, because, you know, we have similar issues, say, when it comes to early teenage discos. You know, I mean, I know so many parents and even my own experiences as my own kids were going through their teenage years. You know, most parents are really unhappy about the kind of the style, the look, you know, the clothes that children are wearing to discos. And yet they also feel quite powerless to stop their kids wearing those clothes, because they know that their child is going to be socially disadvantaged.
Yeah.
If they do. And so most parents probably just cave in. And again, it's, I think, because there isn't a strong enough kind of societal push there. I mean, you know, for all the trouble we had with, you know, things like the Catholic Church way back, you know, there was still a very strong kind of community presence that that was very supportive for lots of parents, because there was a lot of commonality in kind of the values, the underlying values that most people carried. That's not the way now. And so we know that there's just a lot more families who are, you know, unfortunately, probably really disconnected. And so they're not really feeling connected into communities. And then as a consequence, you know, they're feeling very isolated themselves in their parenting. And so some of the choices, they don't feel that they're supported in the choices that they might want to make. And so I think the more we can kind of gather together this kind of community support for initiatives like trying to keep, you know, primary schools free from phones and smartphones in particular, you know, the better.
David, we have to leave it there for now, but you'll be back with us as always, because the questions are still coming in. So we'll have plenty more when we talk to you the next time. That's Dr. David Coleman, clinical child psychologist.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.